You're approaching the end of your first year as governor. You, before this, spent three terms in the U.S. House. Now you're governor of Virginia. What's the biggest challenge? What has surprised you over the past year making that transition from U.S. House to leader of Virginia as an executive?
I think the biggest shift is also, I think, the biggest benefit of coming from federal service to the state, which is how quickly things move. And so, you know, certainly intellectually speaking, I knew when I walked in, the General Assembly was already in session. Bills were already moving. Things were already happening because, of course, they start even before the governor's inaugurated. But actually living in it in the day-to-day and how quickly a part-time legislature moves during their full-time session, I think was certainly like a breakneck speed right when I was first sworn in. And so while that was a huge shift and a very big change, obviously, from the way things are done on Capitol Hill, the real benefit is that as of July 1st, the bills that I signed into law were already beginning to impact people. So the speed, the pace of the General Assembly session, I think was certainly a shift and a change and sort of intellectually expected, but the reality of it is something that you can only really experience once you're here. But the benefit of it, I think, makes up for any bit of the the whiplash of moving so quickly.
We were hearing some chatter from Democratic state lawmakers that they wanted more face time with Governor Spanberger, especially during the budget stalemate that you all went through this year. We heard some lawmakers claiming there wasn't enough communication back and forth between you and the legislature. Do you think that's a product of what you were just saying? Everything moving just really, really fast?
Well, so I think it's also it's a change in the new administration. You know, I would host weekly breakfasts. And so I had legislators at the governor's mansion for breakfast 2 to 3 times a week. We did receptions with new members, receptions with the Democratic caucus, with the Republican caucus, with, you know, this subgroup of legislators and that subgroup of legislators. And so I think I certainly spent a lot of face time with different legislators, but I think that there's always greater opportunity to continue to make sure that there's kind of tangible agenda items, and that, you know, frankly, if we've got a breakfast and there's 15 people there, there might be a legislator who's happy to be there, but they might have, you know, legislative priorities that they're not necessarily going to bring up in a larger group like that. And so I think certainly making sure that in addition to the time that I do spend with the legislature, that we're able to really make sure we're connecting on some of their priorities in a real direct and tangible way.
One of those priorities, as it turned out, was redistricting. Voters passed the bill that would have led to Virginia's congressional map being redrawn, could have allowed Democrats in Virginia to pick up 4 additional U.S. House seats, but that was ultimately blocked by the state Supreme Court. You were out in public in favor of redistricting at the time.
I'm voting yes on Virginia's redistricting amendment. It's directly in response to what other states decide to do, and a president who says that he's, quote, entitled to more Republican seats.
With the benefit of hindsight, do you regret spending political capital on that issue, given that it was blocked?
I think it was an important thing to move on. And I think that, you know, the basics of timing was the only time to be able to have Virginia move on a potential redistricting effort was during my, first few months. I don't have any regrets about that. I do think that, you know, it certainly took time and it took energy and it took people's attention. But, you know, as a function of time, it occurred when it occurred. I think less than optimal timing, but not something that we could have changed. And I think that ultimately the effort to demonstrate that, you know, Virginia was going to take action in light of what we were seeing in other states was an important action to take, even if ultimately the Supreme Court overturned it.
Obviously, you see what's happening in Maryland right now. This week, Democratic lawmakers are voting to set the stage for redistricting for future elections, not for this year. Is that something you would support in Virginia as well, or are you done with this issue now?
We have elections, primary elections this week, and we have elections in November. The only thing I am thinking about as it relates to elections is making sure that we have candidates get through these primaries, that they are set up for success, that they're able to continue to build out their post-primary campaigns, and that our great nominees will win in November.
It looks like some Republicans are vulnerable regardless of redistricting. As we move on through the year and we look to November, what seats will you be watching specifically? What seats will you be putting energy into as potential flips that could go from Republican to Democrat?
Well, certainly, if you look at the 2025 election results, I won the lines of the first district and the second district, and notably in my statewide campaign, I wasn't necessarily intending or attempting to win the particular lines of a congressional district. So I think it speaks to the fact that on the ground there, there are sufficient voters that care about the issues, that there may not be tied to party in terms of just because they're past voting tendencies at the congressional level might mean that they more typically vote for Republicans. That certainly was not the case in November 2025. And so I think that we should certainly see flips in the first and the second. And I would argue that in the fifth and the sixth, based on the strength of our candidates and frankly, the sort of impact of the recent votes of the incumbents there, particularly as it relates to HR1 and the negative impact that will certainly have on the fifth and sixth districts, in addition to the ninth district. I think that, certainly with an aggressive November election turnout, we can flip the first, the second, the fifth, the sixth. And I'll be campaigning in the first, the second, the fifth, the sixth, and the ninth, because go big or go home, certainly at a time like this when we continue to see real negative impacts of federal policy hurting Virginians, whether it is the tariff and trade policy of the Trump administration that has gone kind of uncontested by members of the Republican Virginia delegation when they are hurting farmers, the ongoing war against Iran, the off-again-on-again war with Iran, the impact that that has had on input costs for farmers, the impact that's had on Virginians and gas prices. Then, certainly the impact of HR1, the kind of impending catastrophe that is coming our way because of the impact on our healthcare system, particularly the strong impacts on rural healthcare infrastructure. I think that we have some very vulnerable incumbents. And I think importantly, we have some excellent candidates who are running to represent and to serve the communities that they love and that are, frankly, being harmed and impacted by bad choices at the federal level.
On the midterms, we've heard from Maryland Governor Wes Moore, who's now chair of the National Governors Association. He said he's worried that President Trump could use federal power to influence or interfere with the midterm elections this year. Moore specifically cited concerns about efforts to limit mail voting, even saying he's concerned that Trump could deploy federal troops or agents to polling locations. Do you share some of those concerns, or do you think basically the midterms are going to go on just as they traditionally have?
Yeah, I worry about everything. And I think certainly we continue to see a Trump administration that isn't tied to or beholden to kind of historical precedent of how things are normally done. And so I think that it is important that we recognize that, he continues to sow doubt in the election results of the 2020 election. And so that being the case, I think that we shouldn't underestimate the efforts he might be willing to undertake to sow doubt, create challenges to, or frankly, just make people feel uneasy about getting out to vote. Certainly his continued efforts to undermine vote by mail, his continued efforts to undermine the legitimacy of voting systems across the country, I think speak to this indication. And so as a result, certainly we are, as an administration here in Virginia, continuing to look at all of our options, continuing to make sure that we will have, and certainly with our primaries this week, in addition to the early voting that has been going on for more than a month, we have a strong opportunity to again affirm that our processes work, that they are strong, that our Department of Elections is able to execute strong elections, communicate well with the public, so that when we approach early voting season in September through November, and then ultimately on Election Day in November, that Virginians fully understand their rights, they understand where and how to go vote, and that we as a Commonwealth are prepared for any efforts that a Trump administration might try and undertake that might limit access to, physical voting locations, or might just create, confusion within the voting population.
All right, Governor Spanberger, thank you so much for your time as always. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on.
All right, bye.
Bye.